Today on Annenberg Radio News, religious institutions across the city are moving their money out of major banks. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, November 1st, 2011. I'm Tiffany Brannon. The LA Board of Supervisors fired some intense questions at Sheriff Lee Baca this morning. Religious leaders from across Los Angeles pulled their money out of a Bank of America and Wells Fargo today, part of the National Move Our Money campaign to hold big banks accountable, Emily Frost reports.
Sister Karen Collier from the St. Agatha Catholic Parish realized she needed to take action when she was approached by one of her youth ministers. The bank had just foreclosed on her house. Her father was battling cancer. Due to his expensive treatment, the family had a choice: pay the mortgage or pay the medical bills. The decision was easy. The effect was not.
The bank said, too bad, we're taking the home.
Stories such as this one are far too common in Los Angeles, says Pastor Ryan Bell from the Hollywood Adventist Church.
At this crisis moment, we also find ourselves living in an economy of unchecked greed. As cities and communities, we have enough, but our broken system has allowed and continues to allow the few to exploit that prosperity at the expense of the many.
The religious leaders are protesting the nation's largest banks. They say that while the banks received a $700 billion bailout from taxpayers, bankers are reluctant to help their clients climb out of this economic crisis. The religious leaders who divested their institutions' bank accounts today, many of which are worth close to $1 million, represent just a few of many who want banks to be more responsive to the community demand. Pastor Ryan Bell from the Hollywood Adventist Church urges City Council to pass the ordinance that will allow LA to reward banks that lend to small businesses, help people finance their mortgages and loans, and put money back into the community.
It says to banks who want to do business in our city, if we invest taxpayer dollars in you, then you must in turn invest in us, the people and the communities of Los Angeles.
Cleveland and Philadelphia have both successfully implemented similar ordinances.
We need a new bottom line that puts our families first. We will no longer allow financial institutions that are damaging our country and hurting our families to use our money to do it.
Pastor Ryan Bell, along with leaders from three other churches, went into Wells Fargo and Bank of America branches downtown today to withdraw their accounts. They believe that this is the first step in the right direction and urge everyone to reinvest in their communities by moving their money from national to regional banks. Emily Frost, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA Board of Supervisors fired some intense questions at Sheriff Lee Baca this morning. The LA County Sheriff's deputies are being investigated for using violence in county jails. Kyle Tabuenafroli watched the issues surrounding Baca's crew come to light.
In a sprawling beige room downtown, in front of a panel of slouched LA County Board of Supervisors, Sheriff Lee Baca and his team of officers are taking cover. Baca's at the receiving end of some pretty intense questioning regarding everything. From big things, like the quality of his crew.
These are individuals who went through a training program and were sworn to uphold the law, and they're the first ones to break the law.
That was Supervisor Michael Antonovich, by the way. To the things you'd never consider, like using heavy-duty flashlights as a weapon.
No head strikes. Head strikes are forbidden.
That's right.
Why now for all these issues? Before the year's over, Baca's crew will be investigated for unnecessary force in several jails around town. The new cameras they're installing all over the county facilities are not just for monitoring the inmates. They're for monitoring the cops, too. This is a reaction to recent reports of deputies fighting inmates longer than they had to in order to get even with them. What's more, the supervisors suspect that communications officers right under Baca are keeping information like this as low profile as possible.
Allegations have been made, reports have been submitted. Before they get to your doorstep, somebody spikes them, whether it's deliberately or it's just a bureaucratic maze that those types of complaints go in.
And the supervisors are tired of it. They've poured millions into new security measures for the jails. And with months of surveillance camera installation seemingly wasted, they're ready to see some results.
We're not going to get any more of those reports that the cameras weren't working.
No.
Correct?
They are working, Supervisor.
After all the cameras are installed, and after the investigation wraps up and the proper consequences are carried out, Bacchus still has ground to recover. The tense exchange today showed a board that's been disappointed time and again by an overpromising sheriff's department.
I know, but you have to understand you've told me this before, so I now want assurances.
And for the next few months, whether on the streets or in the boardroom, Bacchus under some pretty heavy fire. Kyle DeBuena-Froley, Annenberg Radio News.
Results from national 4th and 8th grade math and reading tests were released today. As Smith Abuondadi reports, California scores were abysmal.
The report is known as the National Report Card. It analyzes math and reading scores of 4th and 8th graders. The state of California ranks 5th from the bottom. Alabama, Louisiana, the District of Columbia, and Mississippi were the only states ranked below California. Only 25% of California's 4th graders received proficiency in reading. Math scores were a bit higher, around 34%. A quarter of 8th graders were proficient in both math and reading. The 2011 scores were about the same as 2 years ago. Some educators think the tests don't account for English learners, and they argue the sample size is too small to show California's progress. Hawaii was the only state to increase its score over the past 2 years, about 3.5% in math and 2.5% in reading. Overall, scores in every other state have improved by an average of 1 point for both grades since 2009. Smitha Bandade, Annenberg Radio News.
Sorry for the earlier technical difficulties. The teachers' union and the LA Unified School District are getting ready to square off again over contract negotiations. Today, a group of worried parents and community members rallied before the Board of Education. They, too, want a role in the talks. Carla Robinson reports.
Don't Hold Us Back is a coalition of parents, civil rights groups, and community organizations that is calling for involvement in contract negotiations. At a rally this morning, the group spoke out to ensure that the agreements provide students with quality education. Marquise Harris Dawson is the president of Community Coalition.
Typically, community members are left out of this process. We are trying to insert ourselves and make it clear that we have opinions about it. We want to and expect to be heard. Our kids only get one shot at this education, so that's important to us.
Parents at the rally said they want to have a bigger role in the process. Felicia Jones is a parent of an LAUSD graduate.
Parents need to be heard in this matter. For so long, this has been a union and district issue, but really, parents are the ones who are ultimately impacted. Students are impacted, and we want our voice heard. We want them to know what we care about as they negotiate.
Jones said the campaign wants the contract to provide educators and administrators with more flexibility. She believes this will allow teachers to reach their full potential and offer better education. The United Teachers of LA says it welcomes parents' involvement. However, one point of contention with Don't Hold Us Back is teacher seniority. The campaign calls for an end to the last hired, first fired rule. Harris Dawson says it forces schools that frequently hire inexperienced teachers to bear the brunt of layoffs. The union firmly stands behind the policy and supports tenure for educators. Don't Hold Us Back also wants to include an objective, fair teacher evaluation system to reward teachers doing well and help those who aren't. Carla Robinson, Annenberg Radio News.
The California High-Speed Rail Authority released a business plan today that shows a high-speed train would cost $98 billion to build. That's nearly twice the amount of the previous projection. As Alex Norwick reports, the state's mayors are living up behind the train system.
The bullet train system would connect Southern California with the Bay Area and would add 100,000 jobs in the next 5 years. Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa believes the train would benefit the growing population.
We simply cannot move the people and goods that our population has without forward-thinking transportation options. You know, we're 38 million people right now. We're expected to be 60 million by 2050. What are we going to do to move those people?
The High-Speed Rail Authority would like to begin the 22-year project by starting construction in Fresno. San Francisco Mayor Edwin Lee believes the train would reduce carbon emissions and freeway congestion.
You know, in the Bay Area, the commuters, we lose about 150,000 hours a day just
sitting in congestion, and that's kind of an annual economic cost that totals about $2.6 billion of wasted money just sitting right there on our freeways.
Funding for the system is unclear as the authority only has $9 billion in state bonds. Opponents of the plan believe the cost of the train is too high. Commercial railroads and farmers also believe the train would compromise safety and violate property rights. Alex Norwick, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight, a half moon will shine and the temperatures will be cool in the mid-50s. Tomorrow will be bright and sunny, reaching 85 degrees. But you can expect cooler temperatures on Thursday with a high of 69 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll talk with Pulitzer Prize-winning food writer Jonathan Gold about the plethora of good restaurants in South LA. Dia de los Muertos fills Los Angeles with altars, sugar skulls, and yellow marigolds on the first 2 days of November. The Mexican holiday is getting more and more popular. Rosalie Murphy has more.
The Day of the Dead is at least a two-day affair. But at the South LA marketplace Mercado La Paloma, this year's festival is much bigger than its Mexican roots. Art and food are bringing people from all kinds of backgrounds together, said Gilberto Satina. He owns Chichen Itza, a restaurant within the Mercado.
White people, Asian people, Indian people, Latin people, it was really a multicultural event.
Gilberto is serving a special tamale pie called Mupio Pollo. It's what families in the Yucatan region of Mexico used to leave with their ancestors' bodies while their souls waited for the afterlife.
The Mayans have the tradition to use a corn on the mouth to feed the body. And now that corn dog is a little bit more sophisticated and it's a tamale pie.
Visitors have plenty to see, too. Damon Turner is the Mercado's Arts and Cultural Program Director. He helped set up the altars and a festival this past weekend. Dia de los Muertos is special, he thinks, because it recognizes such common ground, family and death.
I think the idea of Dia de los Muertos is really celebrating that which is taboo typically in America, which is death. So like looking at death as a place of strength, a place where we can build community with one another.
Dia de los Muertos ends tomorrow, but Gilberto's tamale pie will be back at the Mercado La Paloma next year. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
LA Weekly food critic and Pulitzer Prize winner Jonathan Gold has visited nearly every eatery in Los Angeles, from holes in the wall to five-star restaurants. I spoke with him earlier today about food in LA. How did growing up in South Los Angeles influence you when it comes to your work?
I grew up in a very mixed neighborhood, African-American, white, and Asians. There were a lot of Japanese. There was that feeling that that's the way a city should look and that's the way things should be.
What was the LA food scene like when you were growing up, and has it changed?
I did not come from a wealthy family. You know, my mom was a librarian and my dad was a probation officer. When we ate out, it was more likely to be a place like Sizzler or some Chinese restaurant in Fairfax. The restaurant scene in Los Angeles has just become exponentially different in the last 30 years. It was very white bread before. Fried chicken restaurants were thick on the landscape. It was the time that a lot of the great fast food chains were being incubated. Mexican cooking wasn't Mexican cooking like we see it now, but it was Mexican-American cooking cooked by people maybe two or three generations removed from Mexico. Chinese restaurants were being cooked by, you know, second and third generation Chinese. Things didn't really start to change until after the Immigration Act of 1965 started really to take effect. And in the 70s especially, you started seeing people come to LA from all parts of the world that hadn't come here before. The city just expanded in these sort of marvelous and unpredictable ways.
Around USC, a lot of people are calling it the food desert. What's your opinion on that, and could it change, or will it change, or is it changing?
When people talk about food desert, there's a lot of stuff to eat within a mile of campus. I think you just have to go and take advantage of it. I'm thinking, for example, of the La Paloma complex, which is on Grant Street. You have a Peruvian slash Japanese restaurant that's good enough to have made its proprietor a Food and Wine Best New Chef this year, which is usually the kind of honor that goes to people who are the head chefs at incredibly elaborate restaurants like Spago, right? You have Chichen Itza, which is an astonishingly good Yucatecan restaurant. There's a decent Oaxaca juice stand. There's a place called Vista Hermosa that has very tolerable food from the Michoacan. And we're just talking about like one complex. You go any direction, you walk into a place, and it's a place that might make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, or you don't know the people, or you're not sure how you're going to be received, but there's nothing to be lost by walking in.
Do you think that your reviews have helped people within Los Angeles and also the greater California area branch out in their culinary experience?
I've always said the one thing that I really wanted to do was to get people in Los Angeles to be less afraid of their neighbors. I've worked at this consciously and sometimes not consciously. For example, after the riots in 92, I wrote about restaurants in the affected zones for, I think, 10, 12 weeks in a row. I didn't tell anybody I was doing it. I just did it. They're people. They live in your city. There's no reason people should be afraid of them.
Jonathan Gold is a food critic for LA Weekly. The Occupy LA movement is still going strong downtown. They announced they're planning a march tomorrow night in support of Occupy Oakland, where the protests have turned more heated. The Oakland Police Department is under investigation for an incident that left Iraq war veteran with a fractured skull. The LA Police Department hasn't taken a drastic measure, but Occupy LA members say they want to raise awareness about the police actions in South LA and elsewhere. The LA Police Department reports that Occupy LA has grown from more than 40 tents to 475 1 month into the protest. As the movement grows of the 99%, a small slice of Americans have become a focal point for supporters and detractors alike. Megan Suisse reports on the controversy surrounding the Jewish community's involvement in Occupy LA.
John Honigsfield isn't a participant in Occupy LA. He just came out to observe. He wore a yarmulke and read a Yiddish book last Friday to see if it would attract any kind of attention. Honigsfield heard rumors from fellow Jews that there was an undercurrent of anti-Semitism in the Occupy movement. About a week ago, Patricia McAllister, an LAUSD teacher since let go, showed up at City Hall with an anti-Semitic sign. Here's what she told Reason TV.
And I think that the Zionist Jews who are running these big banks in our Federal Reserve, which is not run by the federal government, they need to be run out of this country.
Rabbi Jonathan Klein of Clergy and Laity United for Economic Justice says McAllister is on the fringe.
If you think that that's what the Occupy movement is, you obviously haven't walked around to see the vast majority of signs that are messages of love and of frustration, not at any one scapegoated group, but of an economic system that is broken. The people who use those types of media clips are people that want to derail this movement.
This local incident reflects a national discussion. The Emergency Committee for Israel, a right-wing advocacy group, released a commercial suggesting the whole movement was tainted by anti-Semitism.
Why are our leaders turning a blind eye to anti-Semitic, anti-Israel attacks?
The commercial was largely denounced in the Jewish community, including by the Anti-Defamation League, as an attempt to use isolated incidents for political gain. Many Jews have participated in the Occupy movement nationally.
Justice is the core of our tradition. Income disparity and an unlevel playing field are spiritual, moral failures of our society and contradict the Torah.
Honigsfeld is sympathetic to the Occupy movement, but he's also experienced anti-Semitism in his life. Looking around at the protests, though, he says there's no problem with being Jewish here. Megan Suisse, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Lexi Cook to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m.
I'm Lexi Cook here with a look at some of the top stories tonight on ATVN. Big news in the Conrad Murray trial today as the doctor decides not to take the stand. Find out the latest in the trial and what protesters outside the court had to say. Also, Bank of America lifted their plan to charge customers for using their debit cards. And USC is officially changing their logo. Are students happy? Tune in tonight at 6 to find these stories and more on ATVN.
Well, that's it for this Tuesday. We had help today from Samuel Fuentes, Emily Castor, and Annenberg TV News. Emily Frost is our producer. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Tiffany Brannon.